Oh, it's time for Bring It In Troops, little Zoom show. And David, we're going to do, we don't, I mean, look, we're not like small ego people, but we don't like to brag a lot. I think it's like, we're trying to be classy, but I'm just going to be frank. We're going to brag first. I'm going to brag on your behalf now for a few minutes because of some things that have happened in the NBA that you saw before they happened. Well, good morning, by the way. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a bit of a pain in the ass for complaining about the heat and humidity down in Florida.
Well, there's just like it's cold here today. You noted that I'm wearing.
What does that mean? Cold.
A jacket. I don't know. 40s.
Oh, that's cold. Yeah.
And so Judy and I were talking about the weather that we're suffering from, and I'm telling you 100% of the time, if anyone mentions weather on David. David, who never fucking has weather problems. He lives his whole life at 75 degrees, hurricane accepted. David will always jump in with like, what's going on with his weather? Like with one sentence in, Judy and I haven't even talked yet. And he's just like, well, here I got the AC on 76. And it's like, we know, we always know. It's fucking perfect in Florida.
It's not. We know that. It's pouring rain, 86 degrees. It's awful. I'd much rather be in New Jersey right now for maybe a couple of days.
It's not awful.
Let's get back to
do you know how many hours a year I personally spend shoveling snow? That's like a good day. That's fun. We're not the lucky ones. We live here. It's great. We learn how to suffer. But that means sometimes we got to complain about it. That's what we get.
I'm with you, Jared, I promise.
Okay. So over the weekend, Chad Ford, friend of the show, tweets that Scottie Barnes and Evan Mobley's ceilings are eventual, quote, top 10 player in the NBA high. He wrote that on October 23rd. Of course, this draft class will be around for decades, and we'll see who ends up being the best if Chad's right. But we're now three games into the regular season. We've had a whole preseason. And those two players, Mobley and Barnes, have been outstanding, seem to have very high ceilings. What would be amazing, of course, if you're an NBA team, is to have known that before the draft, when nobody said that, except for one fucking guy, this fucking guy from Florida. He wrote in July, right here on True Hoop, that he would draft Mobley first and Barnes second. How are you feeling about that right now, David?
I feel nothing's changed. That's what I actually was tweeting out a little bit too, that really nothing's happened that's surprising. It's fair to say, and I say this with all due respect to every player out there that are rookies, it's been a week. Like, this is what I thought we would see at some point. I wasn't predicting week one. Everyone learns at their own speed, but those two guys are just really marvelous talents. And the kind of talent where, like Chris Duarte, who we'll talk about later from Oregon, who's really had an amazing first week, but he's much closer to where he's gonna likely be. I don't think he'll be a Bradley Beal, maybe lead the league in scoring. I could be wrong. I don't think his chances are great at that, but it's possible he's 24 years old. He's gonna be very good though. I love him, and the Pacers do too. But these two guys are MVP caliber talents, like game changing, revolutionary kind of talents. The way Magic Johnson and Scottie Pippen and Steph Curry, they're not like Steph Curry, but he was a revolutionary player. And Chris Bosh and Anthony Davis, like these are the names that those two players make you think of. So, yeah, this is what I saw in all the tape. That's why we watch tape. And they're really special.
Well, there is like, you do have and we can talk more about this, but like, you know, watching tape and then projecting into the NBA is not how most analysts do it, right? Like most pre-draft content, I know because I used to like manage the people who created this at ESPN, and I know everyone who does it, right, is really calling or trying to call sources and trying to listen to like, you know, this team that's picking third kind of likes this guy and like that guy. There's a lot of just kind of receiving information or not, right? Nobody gets all 30 teams on the phone, right? And if you do, why the hell would they tell you who they want to pick, right? Like, so it's just a very different thing. There are very few people who are really analyzing from the video and then projecting with any kind of track record. Okay, I'm going to read. Oh, and I'll tell you this. I did a little survey of pre-draft publications from this year. And, you know, basically everyone had similar projections. Maybe there's an exception, but basically everyone had Mobley and Barnes like third, fourth, and fifth, right?
Mobley third and Barnes typically fifth. Yeah.
Yeah. There was some a lot. Everybody was high on both of them, but everyone thought like, yeah, you wouldn't find anyone who say they would take them ahead of Cade Cunningham, right? Like, it just
I didn't, or Jalen Green.
Yeah, or Jalen Green.
Yeah.
So now, like, Chad's tweet now is a big change from what everybody was saying then. I'll read to you a little bit of what you wrote. You wrote about Mobley very nicely, saying you take him first overall, and then about Barnes. Personally, I take him second overall. Barnes is a much better player than Giannis was at the same age. He's nearly as tall and has the same kind of length. He jumped 39.5 inches at the combine with almost the longest wingspan of anybody. Jason Kidd wisely and famously moved Giannis to point guard his rookie season. Barnes played a ton of minutes running the point for Florida State. I don't project Barnes to end up looking as physically imposing as Giannis does now, but it's fair to assume he's going to get much stronger and capable as an athlete at the very least. I would not be surprised if he ends up being a far better scorer and shooter down the road. He doesn't yet know how to utilize his excellent paint touch either. He can genuinely defend every position other than jumbo centers like Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic. And even then he can make life tough. Barnes loves to pass, has a flair for the dramatic, and celebrates with equal enthusiasm when anyone on his team does well. He's a decade plus NBA starter at worst in the right setting. With a bit of luck, he's a mix of Scottie Pippen, Draymond Green, and Giannis. Nice going. That's kind of what everyone says now.
Well, I actually now include Magic Johnson in that list. Yeah, and I was wrong on one thing. He looks unbelievable physically. Clearly, I'm mistakenly, and I'm stupid because my son is the exact same age as Scotty and went to Florida State at the same time. They didn't have any summer training last year because of COVID. And once the season begins, you're not lifting weights the same. So whoever has been in charge of Scotty's body, A+. He's huge in all the best ways. Big, strong muscles, but still lean. He's not bulky. He looks like a man, and he didn't look like that a year ago. I didn't see Magic Johnson. I was told Magic Johnson by his coach before he ever played a second at Florida State. I didn't see it last year. I know a little something of Magic. He is my favorite player of all time, next to my son anyway. And I see it now. I really see it now. And Magic, Pippen, Draymond, like, Giannis, Simmons, Ben Simmons being the defense. You know, Ben's such an amazing defensive player. And that's where I think, Henry, all of this boils down to. I'm going to quote you. Oh, and you said it. What you said is so ridiculously simple, but it just never really heard very much. Defense is 50% of the game. If we consider offensive rebounding on offense, defensive rebounding on defense, it's half the game. And so why are we discounting that when we evaluate and project? I wrote up for Evan Mobley. I wrote that he has no problem blocking shot with either hand. He's an ambidextrous shot blocker. That isn't common. Most guys use their strong hand, like gigantic, you know, boom. He does it either way very effortlessly and has already had at least one shot block game before or more. And Barnes guards Luka and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And I mean, at the start of a possession, everyone does it if you switch, but he starts with them. Mm-hmm. That's Nick Nurse saying, hey, young fella, start your education now on guarding the 30-point scorers and get schooled sometimes, although he's been pretty amazing at it. He does foul a little too much. He's like a puppy, like all these guys. He's a little exuberant. The thing that I'm actually most impressed with is going to maybe sound surprising is two things. One is mindset. He did not have a scoring mindset at Florida State. And I thought that is not uncommon for college kids who are so focused on the we part of college. The NBA is much more about me and we, and college is kind of reversed typically. And Scotty has learned super fast to just keep running to the rim. I'm a big, tall, long, athletic dude. Keep going to the rim, making plays like he's a center. So I'm super impressed with that mindset change he's made. I also love the fact that he's so energetic and he's so charismatic and he's so energized to play defense. And when they call fouls on him, whether they're good calls or not, he's not reacting. That may change. I once you become a superstar, you can react and it doesn't really matter. He's so young, I'm glad. Don't even waste energy. You're not going to change a call. And you're just going to get distracted. It's hard to guard these guys and do some offensive things. And he's not. He's just staying within himself. Whoever's doing it, Scotty gets the most credit, but whoever's advising him on the Toronto team or Team Barnes, they've done a great job. Mobley too, they're just playing. And I love that. I love that they're not getting too caught up in the other stuff yet. It's not about the spotlight, whatever. It's about trying to help your team win right now. The other stuff will come. And it's going to come for both of them. They're they're both superstars in the making, Henry. They really are.
And rookies almost never help good teams at all.
Right.
And especially not on defense, right? And I think there is, if you dig deep, there's some referee bias in that. Like, you just get called for a ton of stuff.
Right.
But it does seem like these guys have a chance to actually be helping teams right now, which is amazing.
And to be fair, there, and you know this as a Blazers fan, Damian is so incredible on offense that it really doesn't almost matter that his defense is bad if you look at the overall net. LaMelo Ball is that way. LaMelo Ball is surging into this brilliant offensive player. He's not there yet. I mean, right now he is, but he's making three of every four threes. I don't think that's going to continue to happen. If it does, he's an MVP level player. But it's probably going to be more in the mid-30s at best where he was last year. And he's still a very good offensive player. He's an atrocious defensive player, which was a concern of mine when I evaluated him 2 years ago now. He didn't care about defense. I think he does care more now. He's just bad at it. Doesn't mean he can't get better. Of course he can. But he's so good on offense that it's kind of masking that. And that's fine because you can win that way. You better get some defensive help around you. But certainly we would prefer the Giannis's and LeBron's and Anthony Davis's and these guys that do it on both ends. We don't know if Barnes and Mobley would be good enough, as good as LaMelo, let's say, offensively. It's possible, but we don't know if they will. But they don't have to be when they're that much better defensively than almost everyone in the league, especially for their age. So I'm super impressed with that. They care about that. Like, they really, it matters to them. And that's why I think, and we'll talk maybe about Cleveland more later, I'm starting to see some positive signs for Cleveland, in part because their most talented player, who is Evan Mobley, I think he cares about defense. A lot of guys don't, especially not even good players. The best players need to, and I think they both do.
Okay, I just made a note. I kind of want to have a deep conversation about defense versus offense in prospects. But but before we do that, more bragging about you, David. So there's a House of Highlights YouTube video of Scottie Barnes against the Celtics from Saturday where half of his buckets are a particular kind of shot. I think the first time he took a shot like that in the NBA in preseason was against the Celtics. And you, like, I think you might have texted or called me, and you brought up in a story that we published 10 days ago where you wrote, in the second quarter of their game against Boston Saturday night, Raptors rookie Scottie Barnes made a play with playoff implications. Isolated against Tatum, Barnes maneuvered into the paint using his handle and body to go to a slightly fading push shot jumper that he made from about 12 feet in the middle of the paint. It looked perfect and repeatable. It also looked kind of like the basket Magic Johnson used to make. Neither man is a textbook perfect jump shooter, but both are super long, 6'8 ball handlers with a knack for making buckets when they have to. It's basketball's equivalent of getting on base and the precise kind of manufacturing points the Raptors will need to make noise in the playoffs. It's also kind of how Scottie Barnes is not Ben Simmons, right?
Oh yeah, great point. Yeah, I don't know if Jason Tatum pissed him off, but he likes going at Jason Tatum in the preseason and this 25-13 against the Celtics on the road in his, I think it was his first road game. So you know this quote that I use all the time, and we've written about it both at ESPN and then more recently at True Hoop, where it's one thing to know everyone knows the path. It's not hard. Walking the path is hard. And normally it takes years. I mean, Giannis didn't totally figure it out till year 8. And then he stormed through the postseason after it looked like they were going to struggle and won a championship. He'd already won 2 MVPs, but he was still chucking threes and trying to prove he was a perimeter player. To win the championship, he was like, screw it, I'm killing everyone in the paint. He could have always done that, especially once he got his muscles. Scotty never had that last year in high school at Montverde, where he played with like 4 NBA players, including Cade Cunningham, not at Florida State, except for an occasion where it's almost like an accident. But now Scotty is recognizing I can bully most of these guys. And so, I mean, if you could travel 4 years, just 4 years, if you could do a time machine in just 4 years hence, and then see one of these little 6-foot guards switching onto him, they're going to get murdered because he is on a trajectory to make everyone realize these guys cannot, I don't have to beat them with fancy dribbles. I can just, ask my way into the paint and just score over them the way Blake Griffin has been doing against everyone and Zebo did against everyone because they were 6'10". Well, he's almost 6'10", and guards sometimes have to guard him. He can dribble by bigs once he learns how to play with the ball as a primary ball handler and pick and roll stuff. That's not there for him yet. Nick Nurse does a good job of, they do a little downhill handoff action. They love to start a possession where a guy will be coming down the right side of the court, like like the key, the side of the right side of the key extended up to half court. There's another guy on the left side. I call those slots. And they just do a little handoff where the guy on the left slot is flying downhill to his right. And Fred VanVleet gets layups out of it. Scottie gets dunks and layups out of it. That's there now. But later on, he'll be able to learn to flirt with defenders using ball screens and really beat up big guys and just bully little guys. Mobley, too. Remember, Mobley, you know, Scottie's not that had many assists this regular season. He did in the preseason. Mobley got more in the regular season. He's a very unique talent, which is why I had him number one over my favorite player in college, which is Scottie. Well, my favorite player in college last year, besides my son, who played with Raekwon Gray, who also played at Florida State. He's not in the league. Scottie was number two. But the Raptors know what they have. Like, Nick Nurse knows what he has. And thank goodness for Scottie that he's got a coach that's letting him develop, I think, at the right path, not asking him to do too much. Kurt asked James Wiseman to do much last year.
Yeah.
And they're not doing that with Scottie, and I think that's smart.
But you mean basically by keeping him in the dunk spot?
Not letting him not do screen re-screen as a primary ball handler, side pick and roll, and all that kind of stuff. He's cutting, he's spacing out and then cutting, spacing out and shooting. He's allowed to bring the ball up the court and transition offensively, like Ben Simmons is great at, which is smart. Scottie has one left-hand boom pass. He has an amazing no-look pass where he looked left the whole time and threw it to his right, like Magic Johnson used to do. So he uses his eyes to move defenders, which is a more advanced thing to do. But he's not asked to do much in the half court. The Warriors asked Wiseman for too much. And I bet this year they toned it down a lot. They started doing it last year, and then he got hurt. So I think the Raptors have done a great job with him. And Cleveland's done a good job with Mobley. Plays a ton. He's getting a lot of minutes.
Yeah. Well, there's a question of like how many new variables can you cope with, right? So guarding Jason Tatum is like a whole phalanx of things in your head, right?
And exactly right, Henry.
It's like learning how to drive a stick, you know, not that hard, driving stick shift, but you don't want to do it in a snowstorm when you're new, right? You want to be really super automatic with the stick and then try snow, right? And this is like, I feel like this is Scottie Barnes now. It's like, okay, I got all the Tatum stuff in here. Let me go have a little simpler assignment on offense.
It's a brilliant point. And I learned how to drive stick shift, but we live, obviously in Florida, where it's very flat. There was one hill. It was a railroad track. And oh boy, if you were on that railroad track at the stop sign, you better know what you're doing. You're going backwards, hitting the car behind you. And I remember thinking, how do people drive like this in the rest of the world that isn't so flat, you know? This is where I give Nick Nurse a lot of credit. He could easily hide Scottie. Like, LaMelo Ball never guards the other team's best player on a possession, which is fine because they've got other guys that are good defensive players. He probably could do it. I mean, he should have the ability to do it. And he looks great physically too. Nick Nurse is saying, oh, you're not waiting till year two or month two or week two. Like, we're doing it right now. You're guarding Luka. You're guarding Scottie. I mean, you're guarding Jason. Let's see what you got, young fella. And that's good. It's a good challenge for him. He'll learn. He's a brilliant basketball mind for his age. You learn from those reference points. Those mistakes are reference points going forward. And then Siakam's not even there yet. And his game will change a little bit too when Siakam's back. But again, they're not asking him to do too much anyway. So I was on Toronto radio this morning. I think he's going to do even better because right now OG Anunoby isn't that guy. He's just not that offensive player. Siakam probably is, as long as he comes back healthy. And I think Scottie will play better with Siakam, who would draw more attention from the defense than Anunoby's drawing right now.
All right, on to some more David bragging. another friend of the show, John Hollinger, tweeted over the weekend, when is it okay to start worrying about James Harden? James Harden's three games into the season. He has shot 9 free throws total. They haven't had the toughest schedule. They also haven't had Kyrie, but the NBA's preseason title favorites with Kevin Durant are averaging minus 11 a game. Suddenly, it's a big issue that James Harden is not exactly James Harden. 10 days ago, David Thorpe published a story noting something was up with Harden. Here's what you wrote. 2 preseasons ago in Houston, Harden shot 14.2 free throws per 36 minutes. He shot 11.2 in the regular season. Last season as a Net in a new offense with super scores alongside him, he was at 7.3. In 3 games of preseason this year, he's taking 3.1 free throws per 36, 11th on the team. Every team that has employed him over the last decade has assumed he would be a free throw magnet. I don't assume that anymore. What's wrong with James Harden, David? What are you saying?
Well, I in that tweet Judy just posted a picture of, someone wrote after I had written 10 days that he'd never been concerned, never prioritized fitness level. That's the first thing, is you wonder, and you know this, having covered James so long, you wonder if he's just not in shape. And that could be a physical situation with weight and he feels sluggish. It could be that a knee hurts a little bit, an ankle hurts a little bit. And so he's just managing. I went back and looked at his game log for just last season, where he only took 7.3 overall per game. I mean, it was, per game last year. He played 36 minutes a game, so it's the same thing. He went through stretches where he would have 11, 12, 13 free throws in each of those games. He also went through multiple stretches where he would have 8 or 9 or 10 in those three games. He's picking his spots. To me, the alarming part is, well, they've lost two games, and they needed
pick more spots.
Yes, exactly. Which is why I first wonder, is it fitness level to include health, just overall health? It's a fair wonder. He doesn't look great physically either, but he's not looked great before, but still played great. I think, and I can't wait to hear Gerard's comment, I watched their game yesterday where they were kind of cruising against Charlotte, and they just ran out of gas, just stopped. And Charlotte just, Ish Smith ran by. In fact, LaMelo, a great credit for LaMelo, he didn't go back in the game and was asked afterwards. He's like, hey, Ish was rolling. I give huge credit for that. If that's indeed the case, hey, it's about we, which is a big question mark I had for him. He plays, LaMelo, I hate to change the subject, he's an interesting player because he's a brilliant passer, but also takes a lot of bad shots. But Ish Smith ran through Brooklyn like they weren't there. They've not acted like they care about defense. We wrote about this a couple weeks ago too. They just don't care about defense. And Gerard and I talked with this, Henry, on Friday, where I said, you know, they don't have to be at postseason intensity now, or even by season's end, but they've got to get to some level above where they are now so that they can then ratchet up each series going forward and then get to where they need to be for the NBA finals to win. Without Kyrie, like, it needs to be even better than that, because they're just not as good offensively. Unless James Harden does one of two things, which is what we wrote, makes a lot more threes and takes a lot more, which is possible, or gets back to drawing free throws because he's brilliant. The league is down on free throws, or below 20 a game, which I think is a long time low. It's just three games for most teams. So maybe that's also affected James. The rule changes obviously has affected James some. He is not quite the, people have figured out a little better, Henry, how to guard him. I've noticed in closeouts that they're taking a smarter angle to contest. They're not going to block it anyway. So quit crashing into him, or quit landing in his landing zone. Either way, he gets free throws out of that. So there is a combination of, he's a little, maybe a little fatter, a little unhealthier. The league is not rewarding him with some of the, you know, the stuff that he used to do to draw the fouls, and teams have got a little wiser. All those things combine to make the Nets more beatable, because he doesn't have that it factor to get 12 points a game from the line. And they need it right now. It's mostly just Durant.
And then you point out this other thing, I think, on the phone to me, which I think is very interesting, which is, so used to be covering the Nets, you just couldn't have enough good defenders to cover all the amazing players, right? But with this Harden, who's not just roasting everybody, you don't have to put your best defender on him, or maybe not even your second best, which makes it harder for everybody else on the Nets team.
Yeah, no, exactly. You needed to have like a three Matisse Thybulles.
Right. He's got that. Right. Right.
And a lot of teams have one. Well, that one is not good. If Durant wants to score 40, you just have to make sure he shoots it close to 40 times.
Right.
And one of the most amazing things about Kevin Durant, I would think it's one reason why Gerard loves him so much, is he doesn't play that way. I think Kevin Durant plays as beautiful a game of basketball as you could possibly play, no matter what you look like. Like, this guy, he understands the Jazz part of basketball, I think. And that if he takes too many shots, it literally means someone else isn't as involved, and that's to the detriment of the team. Durant just bounced that as good as any scorer ever, maybe better than any scorer ever has, I believe. And yet they probably need him to do a little bit more, because James just hasn't ascended back to where they need him to be. And we just don't know if he will. I tell you what, 20 days in, so 8 games in 20 days, either he'll be in shape or he won't be. I don't know that he'll get much better than that. So we get to the second week in November, if this is still the case, the Nets fall way down my list of likely champions, barring something. Remember, Kyrie Irving isn't there, but that space has to be filled by either Kyrie or another all-star, because they'll get a high-level player or two if they trade him. So that space will be filled by a positive at some point. Right now, it's just air.
I don't know. Caleb, I don't know how I feel about this. He says that feels like Harden's roasting a lot of turkey legs instead of defenders. It's like the dad in me wants to support you in that, Caleb. Like, it's not totally there yet. Like,
yeah. I think he enjoys his off season. I mean that just, he doesn't train his ass off. Andre Miller didn't, worked out right for him. No, he wasn't James Harden. So I think Durant handled it really well post game. Gerard was probably there. So I'm sure he'll tell us later, but I read the quotes of Kyrie's not coming back right now. Like, we got to figure this out ourselves. But I feel like James Harden makes it way easier. They've got issues already, Henry. They don't have a five that can really defend and protect the rim and all of that. I don't think they have an elite defender, period. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Brown is. I'm not sure. But James Harden just has to be a lot better for that. Otherwise, they're a one-man team.
Well, and there's I'm telling you, as a 47-year-old athlete who didn't mind his P's and Q's in the pandemic, like,
yeah,
you know, getting back into shape is way harder with age, right? Like James Harden's offseason habits were fine when he was 25, right? Like,
great point.
But it's just so much harder and so much more injury prone as you're like trying to shed those pounds and get that vibrance back, right? Like, all that work is actually, that's the other thing. You can't just throw work at it, right? Like,
no, he's got to rest too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you're 25, you also have greater capacity just to work without getting hurt, right? And like, that's off the table too. You can't just do whatever Michael Jordan did at 5 a.m., you know, before practice. Like, that's not a good thing for a 33-year-old person to do, right? Like,
no, but this is where, I mean, everyone misses Kobe for different reasons if you love basketball. But Kobe, for players that I was training back when Kobe was really the legend as a player, he got all my guys to believe that I need to be in shape year-round. Like, yeah, that was a big deal for them. They thought Kobe stayed in shape year-round. And I think that was super wise for the exact reasons that you're saying. The older you get, the more penalties there are for getting yourself out of shape in the offseason. You don't got to train like you're running a marathon in July. Right. Just stay in shape.
Maintenance. Yeah.
Yeah. Just maintain it. Right. Kobe did that.
Yeah.
And James Harden doesn't do that.
There's a good Matt Barnes. Matt Barnes' kids were very close with Kobe, and Matt Barnes has very sweet stories to tell about this. And Matt Barnes' kids started to think maybe they were going to be like really good basketball players. And then they went to train with Kobe. And Matt Barnes had told his close friend Kobe that his kids play tons of video games. And Kobe worked out with them for like 10 minutes. And he was like, "Hey, you guys think you're going to be really good players?" They're like, "Oh yeah, you know, I think we're shooting for the stars." And he's like, "Well, you're not going to be good." And they're like, "Well, what are you talking about?" He's like, "Well, you know, how many hours a day do you play video games?" And they're like, "Oh, like, you know, 4 or 5. He's like, "Yep, there you go. Like, you can't sit around that much and be any good, you know, like." And Judy is making a reference to the new Space Jam, which I haven't seen. Have you seen it, David? No. Look at that. Okay. I would also point out about Harden that his coach and himself, they are ramping up their complaining about the referee effect here. Nash says in a story that our friend Om Young Masuk reported on ESPN, Nash says he's unfairly become the poster boy of not calling these fouls. Some of them are definitely fouls still. They're just so alert and aware that he's the poster child of these new decisions. I get it. There's alignment. Some of them are still fouls. They're hyper aware of him reaching for guys' arms, but guys aren't set and they're getting caught, not in a legal guarding position, bumping him. That's a foul. That has nothing to do with the hands. Those are the ones I take a little exception to, but James will get there. What do you make of that?
Separate from just the political aspect of it, I have noticed, and I've watched obviously a lot of games, the refs are trying to piece together who's initiating the contact. It's really fucking hard.
Really hard, yeah.
Yeah, these are gigantic men moving really fast or changing speeds at a brilliant level. And I watched, I don't remember, I'll think of it in a minute, but someone was driving and Chris Boucher just fucking hammered him. And it was just such a surprising thing, but the guy who got hammered was sliding into Boucher, but didn't expect to get basically tackled, and there was no call. And I just thought, oh, it was a Celtics player, because Brian Scalabrine, that's what it was. He was mad. Like, that's a foul. The arm stuff, I'm a little less willing to go with against the referees. James is brilliant at kind of getting his arms in the way, and they're just not taking that. I think they're trying to figure it out. The refs are. They will. I know this. Talking about it's not going to help. Like, if I'm you can do that, Steve Nash, if you want to, but the better thing would be, James, let's skip the donut line. Let's get yourself in shape. Let's take this seriously. If you can't in the next 20 days get a 15 free throw game, we need to know that. Because now we got to rejigger some things for our alignments, our strategies, our structures. But we count on that in a lot of games where you just live on the free throw line, punishing bad teams. Charlotte's not a great team. They're okay. They're going to be a potential play-in team. They're 3-0, but I'm just telling you, they're extremely beatable. And Brooklyn got their ass kicked in the second half. So that's what Nash needs to focus on, and getting his players right. And that's not the referees, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a hard job. When I've sat really close, actually, if you sit with David sees the game. This is the point of this whole bragging segment. Like, he sees it very well, but I can tell you, I don't, at super fast speed, I just don't see it. I have to watch the slow-mo, but like when you say baseline, let's say, and someone drives, like, I'm so glad not to be a referee. I'm supposed to know if he, like, as he brought his hand down, did he get him on the wrist or not? Like, in real time, like, it's a miracle anyone can do that, as far as I can tell.
So when just to be clear, when I was a young man, I was 22, 23, I'd worked summer camps, and most camps, not all, but most, they don't hire referees. They pay their coaches very little money. And we also have to referee. And so when I was refereeing my first games, I was reffing a lot. I was 23 years old, my first summer after graduating and coaching a year. And it was probably fine. I didn't really pay much attention, but it definitely wasn't the easiest thing in the world. And even if I was refereeing middle school games, it wasn't the easiest thing. But, 7 years later, I'm 29, 30, and I've done 10 camps a summer for pretty much seven straight years, not to mention refereeing your own games in practice sometimes. The game had slowed down for me hugely. And it just was so much easier. Now, there's always a personality aspect you have to have. You have to be commanding as a referee. But what I love about NBA referees compared to high school referees, the NBA refs are much, much better and way more humble, mm-hmm. with some exceptions, because they're trying to de-escalate, which is super smart.
Also, they have video review every night. So, like, they screw up all the time.
Oh, exactly. That's a great point. Yeah. they're trying to do an accurate job for sure.
Yeah.
And I think they do an amazing job. It's hard, especially with a rule change. But what they're seeing is they see way more than I do. Because I'm not looking for fouls. They're looking for fouls and violations. Watch a highlight. They're missing all the great dunks. I was watching a referee the other day who was calling the Golden State game. And as Steph is pouring in threes, it's very exciting. He's never looking at the basket. He's always looking at the contact around the rim. Right. And I don't think he's even realizing it goes in or not and thinking about it. They're busy. So, I just think it's smart for I think the Nets have to – I think what Kevin Durant said was great, and now it's a matter of, hey, guys, let's not let this get away from us a little bit. We don't know what's going to happen with Kyrie anytime soon. Let's just assert ourselves a little bit better. And, again, James, if you can't get fouled, we need to know. So let's go – let's engage the James Harden superstar mode, do your best, and then we'll figure it out from there.
It's worrisome. It's worrisome. Mm-hmm. Before we go to our little speed round we have planned, I called Taylor Snar the other day, our friend from Dunks and Threes, and basically we were talking about, how do you evaluate, like, Lillard is pretty bad on defense and amazing on offense. Ben Simmons is, the opposite. They've both been in trade rumors, sort of like, how do you evaluate this? And he said something very interesting. He was categorical. Well, first of all, Lillard is just better, right? I mean, he shows up in all the numbers better, even when you account for his really pretty bad D. And Taylor said, look, he's like, I think that defensive skill is harder to count on. By which he meant, it's just more subjective, scheme to scheme, game to game, team to team. So basically, he's basically saying, like, Lillard might be a bad defender today, but he could go to a different team, or he could stay with a different coach, which has actually happened, and be a totally different defender. He's like, absolutely, so if you're correct, assessing, like, talent of a player, like, it's more fungible than offensive skill. So in his mind, Lillard's much more valuable than Simmons, just because, like, he has this, his offensive skill won't fluctuate with the setting, but his defensive skill will.
I would put a a note to that, which is if you're a primary ball handler. Because if you're not a primary ball handler, but could be, well, then how do you know if you're not getting a chance to do it? Dame doesn't have to worry about that. He always has that chance.
Yeah.
We were talking to Todd Ramisar about his client, Josh Primo, who doesn't really play right now for the Spurs because there's good players in front of him that aren't 18 years old. He's 18. And I asked him, is he a primary ball handler? Because if he's not, well, then we have to evaluate him a different way. And if he can be, that's different. And he's not getting a chance right now because he's 18. And so that's what I would say. I think, and I love Taylor, I use Dunks and Threes for everything. And I completely agree about the coach. I mean, listen, it is a fact, Henry, that there are NBA coaches who just don't really care much about defense. It's a fact. I've witnessed it myself. I've talked to, you know, dozens of players over my time about it. I think I told you one story where I had Udonis Haslem and Kevin Martin at lunch, and I had Udonis tell Kevin what Stan Van Gundy did in practice each day for defense. I had Kevin tell Udonis what Rick Adaman did every day in practice on defense. And it was two very different conversations. So it's just, it's still the case. And so, yeah, take a guy that's playing for a coach that doesn't really care and put him in a place where they really do care and they teach it well and everyone around you can do it well, his number is going to get better, especially if he also cares about it. If your coach doesn't care, why would you care? It starts with caring.
And, you know, and if you're like, owners tend to be sensitive to fans, right? Yeah. And fans just have a really hard time appreciating defense. It just doesn't come up very often. Again, you know, I live near Philly. I had a conversation last night where it's basically like, yeah, Ben Simmons is good at D, and they don't say this, but like, but at basketball, they basically, right? Like, you know, it basically goes like that. Like the defense is like a nice little bauble to hang on the wall. Like, you know, and you know, we don't, you'd never hear a conversation where people stress about Lillard's bad D. Like it just doesn't, like Lillard is a god. Like that's just how it goes. Like he can do the thing that fans notice. Right. Everything else is kind of, I don't know, hard to say. Steve Nash, frankly, was a two-time MVP as a pretty bad defender. Right. Like that whole time. It's just like, well, just not really. For Kobe in his later years was a terrible defender, but we just, it's a non-factor, right? And unless you're trying to win, right? And then it's a giant factor.
Right. That, yeah. Just to be fair, and I really appreciate all the kind things you're saying about me, and no one's perfect and I'm far from perfect, but man, I spent so fucking long studying this game and still do. I was watching tape at 7 o'clock yesterday morning. I was watching tape this morning. It never ends. And I should be fucking good at this. Otherwise I'm an idiot. Why have I spent all this time studying and talking to all these smart people if I'm going to still suck at it? I should be good at predicting these kinds of things or seeing these kinds of things. But to your point, one thing I love about you, Henry, is even though you don't necessarily understand defense like I do, you recognize the value of it, which is one reason why I think advanced metrics are so important. If fans were in charge, we'd have a whole lot of players that can't guard anyone being paid way too much damn money. And we still probably do.
I think fantasy basketball might be ruining a generation of fans. We're just like, those fantasy stats are, they exactly value what's already overvalued, which ruins championship chances, right? Like, that's exactly what happens. You know, everything Daryl Morey ever said to Michael Lewis in that famous sort of like the story in the New York Times Magazine that kicked off the real stats revolution. Like, we need that lesson like five times over now. It's like your team probably sucks because it already overvalues the thing that show up in fantasy. And like, it's the, you know, you're probably going to need some more Thibault, right? And Thibault's probably a terrible fantasy player. You
know? Yeah, right. Terrible offensive player, but amazing, amazing. Like, I watch him and think, oh my God, I could watch him all day. And when I was a young coach, we would do defense for a week straight. Me and my assistant, my dear friend, John Sebring, 6'9". And we both played for the same high school coach. He's 2 years younger than me. And we're passionate about defense. And that's all we did week one. We didn't do anything with the ball. Yeah. Everything was based on defense. Bob Hurley, the famous coach, in his pregame warmup in 1 year, that I think it was 1988-89, they were number one in the country. Roderick Rhodes was their best player. He went to Kentucky. And one of my star players, he then coached Maurice Spates in high school. His name was Larry Murphy. Larry drove 2 hours to go watch them play. And someone drove him and they came back. I said, how'd it look? He's like, coach, they didn't even use a ball on warmups. And then they waxed the other team by 25 points in this big holiday tournament. And so we started doing that. We use the ball a little bit, but it's a culture. And then you got to do a lot of teaching. If you ever watch, I'm sure Caleb will tell you, if you looked at my defensive system, Caleb has my defensive system. It's long. We have lots of audibles. We have lots of options. Well, you got to teach all of it over and over and over. And I've said this to you year one, when LeBron, I told you, I didn't know you in 03, but when LeBron came in, that was a big handicap he had. High school coaches can teach really good defense. Colleges do better. He didn't get that. So you got to figure it out on the fly. There's no time to practice. It takes a while. It's why rookies suck typically, is there's no time to practice defense. So you got to learn on the court and you pay for that. But to me, Milwaukee won a championship every bit as much because they guarded. It wasn't just Giannis deciding to pulverize you in the paint. You better have both. The Nets have to have both or they're not going to win a championship.
So David, speaking of bad coaching, I have poorly coached this show so that we now have like time for you to answer each one of these speedrun questions. You have like 4 seconds. Okay. Like, and then we're going to get you on here. You got that?
Yes, sir.
Take 11 if you need. All right. Ready? Here we go. Okay. Yeah. 19-year veteran LeBron James needs around the clock treatment after Desmond Bane falls into his leg. You saw it live. What are your thoughts?
I thought he was really hurt. Yeah. You made a point in the document about maybe he would have been hurt as much if he was younger. The guy got up and still played very well. I don't know if he could have avoided this, but I don't disagree with your point. It bears watching because he went down and he looked like he was in pain.
If the 76ers are going to wait out Ben Simmons, do they need a point guard?
Yes. They just need another guard. Shake Milton's out. Tyrese Maxey looks great as an average player. They need someone to fill him just like the Nets do with Kyrie.
Are the Thunder worse than the 10 and 72 76ers?
Probably not. I had him winning 16. I still feel about the same.
The Warriors are 3-0 without Klay. Do you upgrade your projection for them yet?
I have not yet. So I'm at 48. I like what I see, but one of those wins, Steph had to do 45 points. Otherwise they would have lost. So I still think 48 is about right now.
Same question for the Bulls.
No, I think they beat the Pistons twice, the worst team in the league right now. So I'm not sold on them just yet. I'm hopeful.
You're a little worried about the Celtics. What are you seeing there?
Yeah, Robert Williams needed to be a really step up guy. His advanced metrics said he would. So far, I've watched a lot of tape on him. He's just kind of been a no-show. No real consistent effort. It's just an effort, possession after possession. So, yeah, I'm a little worried about Robert Williams right now.
Does Carmelo's big game imply anything for the Lakers?
Yeah, great shooter, fills his role, brings energy. This is who he could have been for 10 years if he wanted to be. I'm so proud of him. And, yeah, but I think they need their young guys more. And right now, two young guys are missing.
How's LaMelo Ball doing?
As I mentioned, yeah, passing great, shooting out of his mind. I don't expect that to continue. Second worst defender on the team, probably worst defender of their main guys, but it may not matter. His offense is very good. I don't think they're as good as they look, but you got to be happy if you're a LaMelo fan or a Charlotte fan.
Why are the Pacers one of your favorite teams so far?
They've got two losses by a point, and they played two of the three games in overtime, and they're missing their starting wings. Both are all-star or almost all-star level in LeVert and TJ Warren. So their big guys are doing well. Their smash mouth is working. I'm excited for what Rick Carlisle is doing.
You wrote that the Hawks could win a title soon. How are they doing so far?
Amazing first game, not very good second game, but Cam Reddish, that's what mentioned him next. 6-9 from three after 9-14 last year. They're racing up and down the court, Henry, with their youth, and they got Trey and they got Capella, looks great. They just fell down their second game. They didn't really compete against Dallas, I think it was, but they're going to be very good.
Cam Reddish like leaps off the screen to me. Like,
oh man, so fast. Yeah, so fast.
Well, he looks I'll get back on schedule here in a second, but everything he does looks normal for like a 6 foot tall guy, but he's doing it for, you know, how long he seems like enormous.
Yeah.
For.
Yeah, no, he's good. He's excited. Yeah, Jandre Hunter looks good too.
Yeah. The Suns have not been killing everybody. Are they okay?
I don't know. Chris Paul looked kind of ordinary to me when they lost to Portland badly. They actually just didn't shoot well. I thought they played better than what they looked. But yeah, I mean, Ayton is trying hard. He didn't get his extension. I wouldn't panic if I was them yet.
There's a player who you say should have every team reconsidering their draft processes.
Yeah, so Chris Duarte from Oregon is 24. Rick Carlisle told management, I need a guy that can help us right away, which means you can't draft anyone 22 and younger, pretty much. They took this kid very high up. He's leading the rookies in scoring. He looks like a baller, just a scorer, jump shooter, three-point maker, knows when to cut. I like that. Just because you're not 20 doesn't mean you shouldn't be drafted. If you can help a team win games, draft them. They're not paying them that much money.
Are the Cavs any good?
Oh, no. No. But Colin Sexton looks at the very least like he could be a Lou Williams. Probably needs to come off the bench ultimately. Darius Garland's not even playing yet for them. Rubio is the perfect point guard for Evan Mobley. He's one of the best post feeders ever. He's that special of a guy that creates buckets for post players. Pekovic made a living in Kevin Love with Minnesota when he was there. And Mobley is exciting. Garland's exciting. If they keep Sexton long-term, which they may not, I think he's a great six-man role. And Jared Allen's very good. Like, they've got the makings of something. It's a year or two away, but yeah, they've got the makings of something exciting.
Well done, Dave. We're back on schedule. Jerrod Hector, welcome to the show. That's amazing.
Hey, buddy.
That was really good, Coach. You were on fire in that round. That's, you know, 4 seconds is tough.
I put him in a crisis. I put them in crisis.
Not my first rodeo with Henry, though. We do these in our phone conversations, too. He's like, I'm a busy man. You got 4 seconds. Go.
That's because when I talk to Henry, it's like, oh, I called you about this one thing. And then it's like 90 minutes later. It's like, so about that time that Adnan Khashoggi did that. And it's like, this is where we end up.
No, Jerrod has a crucial flaw as a phone companion for me, which is he's interested in all that shit. Yeah. Like everybody else is like, just stop talking. I don't care about Khashoggi. And I'm like, oh, no, no, no. And Jerrod's like, and then that other guy would tell me that. Like, oh, yeah, you're in, which is a big mistake. Yeah. It's fun, though. It's fun talking to Jerrod.
Very fun.
All right. Jerrod, were you at the game yesterday?
I was at the game yesterday.
I thought so. Yeah. So you also saw the protest?
I did.
Yeah. What did that look like?
Well, I was inside before it happened.
Oh, you were, okay.
And then all of a sudden, I was like, Twitter, what the hell's going on? So I like stormed right over to the thing, and like police are there. I mean, it was just, the fact that Kyrie Irving is bringing together MAGA people and Black Lives Matter people who are all chanting, like, let Kyrie play, is indicative of the horrendous position we are in as a nation and as a society, right? Like, that's just all bad, like, everywhere.
Right. As I tweeted, if all the players started kneeling, for vaccination, whatever they for the pledge for the anthem, they would have a different outlook, I'm sure.
I mean, it's like you literally, I mean, talking about like literally right next to each other, a Black Lives Matter shirt on, and literally a MAGA person chanting the same thing in support of Kyrie. I was like, what the f- is going on?
It'd be nice if they supported pick and roll defense a little bit more.
Oh my God. So I was talking to a coach. And a scout was in the arena, and they were like, dude, this is the early part of the season. All you got to do is play fast and you'll beat them. And that's right. Cause that's what they are. And like, they know they're like, they're in like, you know, 2 months before preseason mode. And it was something interesting you said about Harden that I picked up from the game, you know, his frustration on the fouls. Cause I was really watching him closely were the ones when he was at the rim getting hit and wasn't getting the call. The part where he's going and initiating the contact and they're not calling that. Because we've talked about this before. He doesn't do the jumping into people thing. That's not really the game. So that like is whatever. He's like, yeah, the rule changes on the stuff out the perimeter. He's like, I get that. But like, I'm getting hit at the rim. That's the part that was annoying him. But he also said something that I thought was interesting too, about, you know, you mentioned it 2 or 3 times. Got to get my confidence back.
Oh, wow.
And that's not something I've ever heard James Harden ever not lack confidence. And I think it's because the hamstring injury was the first serious injury he's had in his entire career. And to Henry's point earlier, he can hang out with a little baby and just do whatever and be fine and nothing goes wrong. And I show up, yeah, I'm out of shape, but by game 10, I'm fine. I'm dropping 40, 17 assists, everything's all good. Well, when you are 30, and because he just turned 30, 31, like, you know, we all been there. When you hit
with a lot of minutes,
all of a sudden you're like, ooh, it doesn't feel so good now when I get out of bed in the morning, right? What used to take me a day to get over now takes me 3 days to get over. And so I think it's that, like, he's not quite there yet because that injury, he didn't do anything all offseason, literally nothing. And so he's trying to get himself back into some kind of shape. And to Henry's point, he is not an offseason workout warrior. That's not it. That's not his thing.
But your comment, well, his comment on confidence that's not about making shots as much as it's about cooking guys off the dribble.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's the hamstring and the not training. Yep. You there's a bravado. I wrote this about John Morant. He's Iverson.
John Morant had some bravado last night in that Lakers game. Woo, boy.
God, he knows he can't be guarded, and he brings it all the time. That's how Iverson played. There's a confidence you have to have with that. Harden always had it. It's not there. I didn't ever connect the hamstring thing. That's exactly what it is. He doesn't believe he can do it, and that's one reason why his free throws are going down. And by the way, the whole league's response to James Harden saying he's getting hit a couple of times, like in the call, welcome to the club, dude. We've all been getting hit. We don't get the calls you've got. So you're coming down towards the average now. That's all. That's what they're saying anyway.
When he was, he's the accountant who got the Fortune 500 company out of billions in tax bills, right? Like, right. This has been his game, right? Now he's like, IRS. It's like, dude, you have profited from the IRS more than anyone ever. It doesn't mean it isn't super skillful and everything, but like, it's not, it wouldn't work on the playground. You know what I mean? Like,
It's also not a strategy. It's not a strategy to say, I'm going to get more calls at the rim.
Right.
Yeah. Right. That's not that. That's why I'm saying they've got to see what he can do so then they can make some moves. They're not going to trade him, but they've got to change the way they play a little bit. You can't just throw it to him and get, 20 points on 12 possessions because of free throws in most games. But Durant looks great to you, right?
The only player that looks like he's ready to ball and ready to play, you're playing the playoff game right now, is Durant. Yeah, everybody else is like in, I don't know where they're at. The other problem too is the roster is not constructed to be without its third star. So Durant, Harden, and Irving, coach, they're force multipliers, right? When they're on the court, everyone else's deficiencies get masked because they're so good at everything, right? Well, when one of those big pieces is now missing, I need you to do more now. Yeah, well, that's not my game, right? All of a sudden, Joe Harris has got to dribble inside.
James Harden's dad was out there.
He's got to dribble inside the arc and do stuff. No, not good for him, right? Nick Claxton's got to do more, and Nick Claxton has not been looking good early.
No.
So it's worrisome for them right now. Again, Durant's the only one who's like doing stuff. Everybody else is kind of like in, it's July.
What's the vibe in the locker room like? Like, are they calm?
So we are not allowed in the locker room because they're doing the thing that they do, and they're not worried because of Kevin, right? They're like, it's game two, it's game three, like whatever, we'll be fine, we'll figure it out. We just got to get back to what we're doing. And they have stretches, right? Like in that Hornets game, they look good through two and a half quarters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then all of a sudden when they put the bench guys in, everybody was like, all right, game's over. And I was like, oh, well, guess not.
No.
So David and I talk a lot about storytelling. Just this morning I was explaining that a good story has someone who's vulnerable, scared, right? Like in struggle, right? And in sports, we just won't let them say that, or they won't say it, right? It's like the Nets today are up against it.
For sure.
Right? But they won't say that, right? It's just because they're focused on their opponents. They want to show that everything's under control because they don't want whoever, the Sixers, the Bucks, whatever, to feel like they're vulnerable, right? Mm-hmm. That's their thing. But when they're talking in the microphone to the fans, like it would be way more popular as a sport if they were like, man, like I'm terrified. This has gone, like I don't have Kyrie. I barely have James. Like we don't have the calls anymore. Like half the roster's not playing well. We're 1-2. Like we're losing by a dozen points a game. Like if they win a championship now, and they might, like it's because of some, like the Disney scenes are about to happen, but you got to set up those Disney scenes, right? Like you got to
have the crisis moments, which is why I felt the Harden comment about having no confidence was huge. I was like, ooh, look at this moment of honesty. Like that's big, right? Like,
it really is.
Is his hamstring okay now?
The hamstring's fine, but the soft tissue injuries, like he's not going to feel 100% till he's, to coach's point, he can cook guys, right? And he's not quite there yet.
Yeah. Can we talk about the Blazers for a second?
Yeah.
Before the Suns game, I told David that they were going to get roasted, and then somehow they won by a lot. The Suns were on the second night of a back-to-back. But after watching, I think I watched practically all of the post-game interviews on Sunday. The Blazers feel like they played championship level defense. Like they're so excited about the defense they played. And the key phrase that came up again and again is multiple efforts. And you can see it. You can see it on the video. You can see this. Like, it just made clear to me more than anything. I'm like, oh, how weird that multiple efforts is a new idea. Like, what the, like,
I mean, I say
innovative. Like, okay,
all the time. Yes, it's scheming and it's body positioning and imps and all that. Most of it is just like giving a shit and giving effort, right? And so many times guys are like, eh, whatever. And like, they're not rotating. You can see it. I'm like, you literally do not care about this end of the floor right now. So yeah, multiple efforts.
Yeah. What do you take? What did you see, David?
Or you know what I saw. I sent you a lot of video, didn't I?
Yeah.
I saw a Phoenix Suns team missing incredibly open shots, or Chris Paul not really attacking when he should have. There was one other player that surprised me with his reticence to attack. I did not like what Portland was doing defensively from a scheme point of view, but I allow that they can get better. It's week one. It's going to be too nerdy to talk about this, but the way
nerd out, let's do it.
The way they're defending, so they're asking their big in a ball screen, let's say it normally is Nurk, to meet the screener at the level of the screen, as opposed to dropping back. You can picture that. And so that means now you've got two guys. Well, in that game, Ayton, they were playing Phoenix, Ayton was slipping early and running right to the middle of the rim. But Nurk is up at the level of the screen, so he can't defend that, which means you have to get help from the weak side, right? So they're pinching in, they're tagging, we call it, which means there's a guy wide open on the other side. So you have to race out there, right? And then you're just rotating and rotating and chasing and chasing, and it wears you down. You better have a team made of speedsters. The Miami Heat back in the day could have played defense like this. I don't think Portland's built that way. CJ and Dame are not in the category of speedster. They have some other speedsters. Mm-hmm. So I love trying it, because you may want to go to it for a possession or two in a game, or five or six or whatever. But as your main focus, I don't think this will be the defense they employ late in the year if they're going to be good. It'll be a trick they use as opposed to their main fundamental one. But it is forcing them to play hard. This is you guys have heard the saying, zone versus man. People argue about it. One reason why coaches hate zone defense is you can be lazier in theory. And so man-to-man forced you to play more aggressively and intensely. And I think Chauncey's wise for doing this. I just don't know if they can stick with it unless they get much better, which is possible. And they can also change their roster a little bit and bring in more athletes, you know?
There's to that. Okay. I have a little observational based theory that Nurk's on the trading block here. And like, they're sort of showcasing Nurk to get his value up to trade him. And I will note that Chauncey Billups, go and listen to the tape, but post game, he said something like, he said, right now, our bigs are, you know, and then he started listing names of like who the bigs are. I thought, right now. And then he talked about, my favorite thing that happened out of all of this game and Chauncey's post-game press conference was he talked about Nasir Little, who what you're describing, David,
great,
is important, right?
Yeah.
And he basically was like, I want you to play unbelievably hard. And then let's do that. Make sure we do that. You just play crazy hard, and then we'll talk about slowing the game down and schemes and exactly where to be. But like, for now, just like, let's get that mindset of playing unbelievably hard all the time, which is, that's not a role they had on this team last year.
Right.
No, it's great. This is why part of what we're seeing now is, I think, the result of, we are now in the third season in one full calendar year.
Yeah. Right?
We've had parts of three seasons in 12 months, which is absurd. So all the teams we're talking about that are like lollygagging or whatever, what's the common characteristic? They got old dudes, right? Old dudes aren't chasing and running and just not. So if you're the Hawks, if you're whoever and you got young, young dudes, race up and down. We got fresh legs, we can do this all day. I got a back-to-back and I'm 32. Absolutely not. You're yelling, switch, like, because you're not chasing. You're just not doing it.
Yeah, we'll know a lot more in a couple of weeks. We'll know a lot more, as always, as that kind of plays itself out, you know?
Yeah. And that, the odds of everybody staying healthy in their third season in a calendar year are lower if you're old. Right? Like, it's just the truth. Like,
that's what I thought about with LeBron last night.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I think it's the Suns count on a lot of young players. I think obviously they need Chris Paul to be good, but like, I think that's an advantage they have among the elite teams, is there's just a lot of them are 23.
Yeah. We draw, make sure on Friday we talk about what LeBron his shit talking to campaign. Did you see it?
Oh yeah. Be humble. Be humble. You were home a year ago. It's like, all right.
Dude, so good. We have to talk about it on Friday. It was so good. Yeah.
I mean, you know, listen, as we go, Ja Morant, what a hell of a performance against the Lakers.
Am I stupid to say Iverson? Like, no one's ever written that I've seen, but this is what I thought when I saw him.
But I think he can be better than Iverson because I think he's got a better shot profile. Like, I think he can be a better
shooter. He's got a chance to be a better shooter.
Yeah. So I'm like, he's
unbelievable. He is the most entertaining player in the league to watch.
So good. Fearless. No fear whatsoever. Fearless.
Yeah.
As much as we're having fun, Judy says, it's time. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Gerard. Thank you, David. Thank you, Judy. See you guys on Friday.